Now, did you know that it's possible to feel not just happier and healthier as we grow older, but also fitter, smarter, stronger, less stressed, and even sexier if we really start to look after ourselves? Well, Janie Goddard has written a book called Rewind Your Body Clock. It is about rewinding your body clock, but to do it naturally. And she's here to share what she's learned with us. Great to talk to you, Janie.
You too, Selena. Thank you so much for having me on. It's such a pleasure.
Ah, my pleasure. The pleasure's all mine. So how does this work? Because I like the sound of this.
Ah, yes, I know. It's a great title, isn't it?
Yes,
everybody's
it
very
is.
Intrigued by it. Yes. Well, you know, the thing is, I think it's super important for all of us to realize that we have so much more control over the aging process than we previously were led to believe. I think what happened in sort of previous years with previous generations is that we were sort of laboring under the misapprehension that, or the misunderstanding, I suppose, that our genetic makeup was set, that if your parents had suffered from a particular ailment, your grandparents, your great-grandparents, then it would be inevitable that you too would actually succumb to this. But thanks to the new field of, relatively new field of epigenetics, a field in science that shows that the lifestyle choices that we make on a day-to-day basis have enormous effect upon the way that our genes actually express. Now, what I mean by that is that, you know, we've got genes that we carry, that we've inherited. Some of them will turn on and some of them will turn off. And we can sort of kind of sway the odds in our sort of favor, if you like, by choosing healthy lifestyle approaches. Now, this means nutrition, exercise, mindset, positivity, gratitude, and all of the things that we associate with living a long, happy, healthy life. And the truth of the matter is that we can actually sway our future health by making those right choices day by day.
That's great news. I mean, you are correct. We've all thought, you know, you look at your parents and think, well, that's basically how I'm going to be when I'm their age because it is genetics. But why has nobody mentioned this before? This is great news.
Well, they have, but only if you're a complete geek and you spend, you know, you burn the candle at both ends like I do. My motto on my website is doing the science so you don't have to. So if you're a complete and utter geek and you really, really like reading things like the Journal of Epigenetics and so on, you'll find that scientists over the last probably 5 years, it's a pretty new field in many ways, but pretty much over the last 5 years, they've started to put two and two together and actually acknowledge that lifestyle changes actually do change our genetics. So for example, we see that, you know, people who make poor lifestyle choices, they do age prematurely. So we know that, you know, it doesn't take too much to work that out. Similarly, for example, there was a study where they had mums who were carers of children that were very, very, very poorly, and they compared those with mums which compared their telomeres, the ends on the caps of our chromosomes that essentially stop them from sort of unraveling, so to speak. These telomeres can be tested and they give a pretty good overview of your biological age. Mm. Now, the mums who were the carers of the very poorly children were measuring 10 years on average, between 10 and 17 years, but say an average of 10 years older than the mums of healthy children. So, you know, the point is that stress,
yes,
and other lifestyle factors, mm, do dramatically age us. So, you know, in the past, we would say, gosh, that person's been under a lot of stress. Don't they look haggard? Well, the point is, actually, yes, they do, because they're actually aging biologically prematurely.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. I suppose, yeah, as well as stress, not probably getting enough sleep if they've got poorly children, that's not going to help, is it?
Well, that's right. I mean, lack of sleep is considered to be a stressor. So if we conceptualise stressors as being anything that basically moves you outside your comfort zone. So whether it's eating poorly, whether it's, you know, being a carer for somebody who's very, very, very poorly, and you don't have support. I mean, there's a lot of evidence to show that caring is actually very positive. So, you know, you can't just take a broad brush and say, no, being a carer is totally deleterious to health. It really isn't. If you've got support and if you feel that you're not sort of being beaten down by all of that, poor food choices, lack of sleep, as you say, lack of hydration, not enough appropriate exercise, all of these things, even things like watching the news, they are all stressors. They all move us outside our comfort zone. So when we think, a lot of the time we think of stress as being, oh gosh, you know, I'm really under stress, I've got so much work on, or my boss is being beastly or what have you. It's not just that. There's so much more to it. So anything that moves you off center, off kilter in a way, we can conceive of it as a stressor. So those are the things that we have to become aware of and very mindful about. And actually, one of my favourite, I suppose, anti-aging scientists. I'm really her biggest fangirl, actually. So it's quite ridiculous. This is Professor Ellen Langer, who works at University of Harvard. She's a social psychologist, and she's the scientist who's done most of the work from the sociological and mindset perspective around aging. And Ellen Langer really estimates that 95% of aging is due to our mindset and the way we view the world and the types of activities that we get involved in. So she's found that volunteers, for example, people that go out of their way to help others, age much more slowly than people who are very self-centered and self-centric.
Yeah, that makes sense as well. What about something, Janie, that seems to keep coming up all the time at the moment? It's a bit of a buzzword, and it's breathing, how important breathing is. Would that make a difference to the aging process?
It really does, actually, yes. In the book, in fact, I've dedicated an entire chapter to breathing and breath work. One of the things that we find is that if you're stressed, your shoulders are likely to be up round your ears. You're probably breathing very shallowly, and that actually makes a huge difference to your health, because what happens is it promotes chronic inflammation. Now, chronic inflammation is something, it's like a common denominator that underlies every single disease that we quite wrongly associate with a natural part of aging. Now, those sorts of diseases include the lifestyle-related cancers, which are the majority of cancers, actually, things like arthritis, type 2 diabetes, kidney disease, heart disease, and even the neurological conditions, Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. So all of those have chronic inflammation as an underlying common denominator. The point that I really need to get across, though, is that a lot of these diseases can be prevented, but if they have arisen, they can be halted and in some cases even reversed, providing that they haven't gone on far, far too long. Obviously, there's always a caveat and we are all different. But the point is that with things like breath work and, of course, all of the other things that I talk about in the book, so nutrition, sleep, as we touched on, exercise, gratitude, mindset, socialization, correct hydration, all of these things contribute to reducing chronic inflammation. And if we can get that under control, then we are dramatically rewinding our biological clocks and essentially getting biologically younger.
So what about hormones? Did you cover that in the book? Because hormones, particularly for older ladies or more mature ladies, should we say, can have a massive effect on you, can't it?
Yes, they do. You know, it's interesting that we're all told about sort of what happens at puberty, but nobody really tells us what happens when we go into menopause. No. I mean, it comes as a bit of a shock.
It's like the taboo word, isn't it?
Yes, it sort of is, really. And it's a bit of a shame because it's such a natural part of our life cycle. And of course, you know, the pharmaceutical industry are doing their very best to medicalize it when, in fact, it's a completely natural practice. But what I do talk about, yes, there is a chapter dedicated to hormones and menopause and so on. I make the point, and actually I've made a really interesting video about this on my YouTube channel as well, because so many women don't realize that in other cultures, now I'm thinking about Singapore, Japan, rural Greece and other countries, they don't even have a word for menopause because they don't have menopausal symptoms. What happens is that periods just stop and that's it. They don't get the hot flushes, they don't get the grouchiness, all of the things that we just assume are a normal part of menopause. So the common denominator that all of those women have going on is that they are active.
So they're
not sort of going to the gym. They're just consistently active throughout the day. They have a really good social structure. This is one of the key elements in living longer and more healthily. In fact, if you've got a really good supportive social life, you can add an estimated extra 9 years of healthy life to your years. You know, so it's not to be underestimated. They also tend to eat a predominantly plant-based, usually organic diet. So what that does is it takes out of the equation the very pro-inflammatory animal proteins. So meats, fish, milk, eggs, dairy, all of that sort of spectrum. So all of those dramatically promote inflammation. So they're not eating very much of that at all, if any. Socialization. And the other thing is mindset and meditation. A lot of these women have a meditative practice, be it something where they perhaps go to the Shinto ladies in Japan will go to a temple. The ladies in rural Greece will tend to be Greek Orthodox, so they will have a meditative prayer practice. So it doesn't matter if there's a religion attached or not, as long as there's a meditative process. And one of the things, again, also on my website, is that I've got something that I think is so powerfully strong. It's an instructional download for something called the relaxation response. Now, this is a meditation that is done twice a day for 20 minutes. I learned it from its creator, Dr. Herbert Benson, who wrote the book, The Relaxation Response. And I studied directly under him at Harvard Medical School on his mind-body medicine course. And it is an incredibly powerful form of meditation that actually rewires our brain so that we are more resilient to stress. So any of those stresses I was talking about earlier, if they suddenly arise, and you know what stress is like, you know, something will happen most unexpectedly and we'll sort of go directly into fight or flight panic mode.
Yeah.
Well, when you start to do the relaxation response, what happens is it mediates your response so that you're not responding directly from that ancient reptilian part of your brain. They call it the reptile brain. It's nothing to do with reptiles, but it's sort of a similar sort of structure to a reptile's brain. That's the only sort of commonality, really. And it's the very ancient part of our brain, just kind of above the brain stem, that originated first as we started to evolve. And what the relaxation response does is it puts a little bit of space between you and the stressor and enables you to make an informed decision without having a knee-jerk reaction to the stressor. So it gives you that very, very intense split second to actually think, okay, right, well, this has happened. What am I going to do? What's my response going to be? And so you don't enter that fight or flight mode that, again, is dramatically inflammation provoking. Now, of course, back in, you know, our days as cave women and cavemen, you know, that response, that fight or flight response was absolutely valid because, you know, you may be fighting off a saber-toothed tiger in order to save your family or similar things like that. And so, of course, we needed that fight or flight. But nowadays, in the world that we live in today, we're constantly producing the fight or flight response because we've still got lots and lots and lots of stressors, whether it's sitting in a traffic jam and being late or anything like that. But the problem is we don't have any way of switching off the stress response. Back in the day, we would have had our fight or flight moment. We would have fought off and used our bodies to actually fight off the attack, the saber-toothed tiger or what have you. And that will have actually burnt through the upswing in pro-inflammatory hormone cortisol. The problem is, you see, we're not using our bodies. We're simply being very receptive and allowing stressors to come upon us. And we never actually do anything to kind of mediate them and get rid of them and actually flush it out of our systems. So it builds up and builds up and builds up. And the upshot is that we're victims of chronic stress, which leads to chronic inflammation, which leads to sleep deprivation, which also leads to dangerous fat accumulation around our middles and inside around our organs as well.
Yes, of course.
And that is a very dangerous situation because it can lead to all sorts of really nasty chronic disease.
Yeah. Can I ask, Janie, what's your story? Why you got into all this in the first place?
Yes, of course. Well, it's a really intriguing thing. A lot of people say, why did you get into this age rewind thing? And it's actually because I have an autoimmune condition called rheumatoid arthritis, and I have a couple of other things going on. But what happened about 17, 18 years ago, I had already developed RA and was in a wheelchair at the time and went through a very, very stressful period in life, relationship issues, work stress, and so on. And I ended up, what happened was I ended up having a massive flare-up of rheumatoid arthritis. Now, for people who don't know, rheumatoid arthritis, it's an autoimmune condition. It's not just something that affects your joints. It actually affects your entire body. So, and it's essentially, it's out-of-control inflammation. And what happens is that your immune system starts to get to the point where it fails to be able to differentiate between external invaders like germs and bacteria coming in, and it starts to think that elements of your body, your brain, your kidneys, your liver, your lungs, your joints, your connective tissue is an invader. So your immune system actually mounts an attack upon you. And it's a very, very frightening thing. And so I'd been living in absolute agonizing pain for many years, was in a wheelchair, completely non-bed weight bearing, had this enormous flare-up that suddenly took me almost overnight down to 5.5 stone.
Oh,
I'm 5'4", and so what happened was that the out-of-control inflammation essentially destroyed all my muscles. It was using my muscle tissue for fuel. Once all the fat had been burnt through, the muscle tissue was then just completely demolished by my immune system. I was taken into a hospice because I was told to get my affairs in order. They really expected me to last about 2 weeks. My mindset wasn't there, though. This is the strangest thing. Although I was in this place, and although I was being told by the medics, you know, get your affairs in order, that's it, I couldn't buy into it. It was the strangest thing. Sorry, I do apologize. Let me turn that down. That's the news alarm. Anyway, so I was in the hospital for 2 weeks, and then it became quite apparent to them that, well, gosh, she's not actually going into this dying process as we fully expected. They kept me there another 2 weeks, and they said, well, actually, you know, we're going to have to move you somewhere else that's got lifting equipment and so on, because I was locked into a fetal position. I couldn't move. I was just completely and utterly immobile in excruciating pain. But they said, look, let's get you out of here, and let's put you into a residential center where perhaps they might be able to give you some sort of physio or something, possibly to help you, because we now think that you're not going to, this isn't your time. And so I thought, well, okay, fine, that's great, you know, because I couldn't really sort of, I couldn't get up and walk out, obviously. So I said, fine, you know, do with me what you will, that's absolutely okay. So I was moved to a residential centre where they had lifting equipment and so on and so on. And I started to bring friends in, because, of course, I had all this expertise, having, you know, I've worked in the field of complementary medicine and natural health care for well over 30 years, and I'm a bit of a strange one because I've got a little bit of a foot in both camps, conventional medicine and complementary medicine, because when I trained in my first discipline, which was homeopathic medicine, we were training alongside the conventional medical students at Imperial College. And our lecturers for anatomy, physiology and pathology were the same lecturers that taught the med students. So I've got quite a strange sort of grounding in both, which kind of means that all of my recommendations are very fully science-based.
Okay.
So I was bringing in the science of what was going on, and I was also getting my friends to come in and, you know, give me some healing, work with my nutritional status, and, you know, start to help me to realize where my muscle tissue had been so that my brain could start to reconnect to it. Little by little, I learned to start to move again. It was a long period of time that all of this was going on. And then eventually I learned to stand, having been told by my doctors, based on all of the radiological evidence, that I would never stand again or never walk again.
That's amazing. I'm so sorry, but we are sadly running out of time, Janie. So have you managed to reverse your biological age as well?
Yes, well, that's right. When I was in the hospice and just afterwards, I got tested, and this was 19 years ago. I was measuring at 55. I'm now 55 and I'm now measuring at 27, and
fantastic.
I've been at 27 biologically for the last several years. So there's plenty of evidence to show that it doesn't work just for me, but my clients as well.
That's wonderful news. Well, the book is called Rewind Your Body Clock, The Complete Natural Guide to a Happier, Healthier, Younger You. It's by Janie Goddard, who we're speaking to now, and it's out now. You can even buy it from our website, tre.radio. And to find out more about Janie or her YouTube channels, you can go to janiegoddard.org. Janie, thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me, Selena. Real pleasure.
Bye-bye.